to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollie. Mr. Matt Wormer on the board. S&P futures up 20. NASDAQ futures up 94. We're going to wally in here. We got banks doing well. Let's see. Money for free. What is it? What's the thing?
I think it's money for nothing and your chicks for free.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Let's not confuse that.
Well, back when like MTV, you know, it was Dr. J and I, JD lived together down on the south side of this huge house in Beverly. Dr. J was addicted to that. But back when it was just spectacular looking women and music. Does MTV even have?
It used to be a great channel. It really was.
It was a great channel. And I was absolutely captivated by it. This is one of these things you sort of burn in your memory. I remember the very first music video that I saw on MTV. And I'd sort of seen kind of examples of music videos with the Monkees and HBO had a series of short, you know, songs where people were playing just for entertainment between shows. But the first, do you guys remember the first video you saw on MTV?
I remember a handful of videos that I've seen a million times, but I don't remember the actual first one.
This is talking about 1984 or 5.
So I was in law school, and started law school in 1982. I went over to a friend's house, and they had just gotten cable. I had not had cable up to that point. We flip on, and they said, "You got to see this channel." And the video was "Rock the Casbah" by The Clash.
By The Clash.
Oh, yeah.
And one of my law school classmates goes, "What's with the armadillo?"
So do you know the first ever video that MTV played?
Video Killed the Radio Star.
That's right. By the, what are they, the Buggles or the Bugles?
The Bungles, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think here. But
I mean, that's one of those cultural earthquake events. I was watching a documentary. By the way, Amazon and Netflix both have some fantastic documentaries on the preparation or creation of various classic rock albums, and I was watching the documentary on ZZ Top, you know, and how they came about, and the impact of MTV on that group. I mean, it literally completely changed the nature of that group. And of course, the Eliminator album had fantastic music on it, but once they determined that they were going to put a theme together for all the songs on that album, and it of course was the, I don't know what kind of car that is, but the Eliminator hot rod with the three, you know, mob supermodels or whatever they were getting out of the car every time, and the guys with the beards appearing and then disappearing in and out of the, like ghosts in and out of the video, and that, I mean, there were groups that would never have gone anywhere except for the fact that they could visually. Yeah, they could visually sell this stuff on their songs, and had great creative teams.
What I'm trying to think now, my memory is wobbly. We lived in Beverly, was not wired for cable, and yet we were watching that. Were we watching it on TV, or was it one of the UHF channels, or what was it? Because we were getting it. You know, we had
to have cable to have MTV.
Well, we never had cable.
So you must have had something wired.
Well, there's no way that the city was wired in 1986. So we must have that. We must have that on TV. We had the MTV box,
and they were picking it up.
They were.
You were pirating it or something, because that was the only way. That was the only way you could get it. I mean, Michael Jackson. When Michael Jackson's Thriller, when that video premiered, I remember the buildup that was going on, because we dialed the channel and just had music on in the background when we were home. And I remember the buildup on the world premiere of this video on like a Saturday morning or something. And I remember just thinking, oh, okay, I'll tune it in. And to see, again, the creativity, of course, Jackson was fantastic on that kind of a setting. His dance moves, his physical, his physicality on the video screen. But to take that song and turn it into kind of a Vincent Price, you know, monster movie and stage all that stuff, I was riveted. I was riveted to that. I was riveted, you know, almost all of Jackson's stuff. I never did figure out the armadillo.
well, I think the MTV.
I think Thriller was probably the best music video ever made.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
If not, it was right up there. Although I will tell you, the one that I liked better than Thriller, but for obvious reasons, and that was Robert Palmer's Addicted to Love.
Oh yeah, I remember that video too.
wasn't Eddie Einhorn behind the? What happened when the Sox went to Channel 32 or whatever it was, and the Cubs went to 9? Then all of a sudden he decided he wanted his aunt. I think it was Eddie Einhorn, but on TV you get a box that you stuck on top of your TV, and it had a little antenna on it, and I think it all got fed from UHF channels, but went into your TV at one channel. And he had a dial on the box, and you got the Sox games, you got a few movies, you got a bunch of porn movies, and I think you got MTV. I think that's how we got it, because when there's
no
way
makes sense.
There was a club in New York, Matty. You'd love this place. They tried to do that sort of motif in a club where they had, it was called the Telephone Club. Have you ever heard of this place, Lou?
No.
I don't know how the hell we found it, but Dr. Jay and I were out there doing something for the board of the SIBO. Jack goes, we gotta go to this club. So of course, you know, travel with John's always fun. So we end up at this place. They had three old type, you know, telephones from like out of the Sting or something, the wooden telephones, and three or four, let's just say, smoking hot ladies in not a whole lot of skirt. And their deal was they would go in and out of the telephone like they were making a call, and then come out and they'd go to the other call, and then they'd sit at the bar and go back in. It was like their own video all night long while they played songs. These girls walking in and out of telephones. It was fun to look. I mean, it was great to look at, but you're like, who dreamt this up? But it was like a bar video with three girls going in and out of a big, you know, vintage telephones.
So here's the question. I mean, we're showing our age, even that. What happened to MTV? Why did they leave that model?
I have no idea.
And what happened to did the music videos just become passé, or did somebody decide, I can't, you know, I'm not going to beat Michael Jackson at his own game, so we're going to do something else?
When is good music and good looking people ever become passé?
It's a good question. All I can tell you is that they got into the reality TV game, starting with The Real World. They sort of invented the reality TV, and for whatever reason, reality TV programming was outrating any sort of music video programming that they were putting on there, and so they just kept expanding that and expanding that and expanding that, and then would just do music videos overnight. And then now, I don't know if they do music videos at all. I haven't watched MTV in years. I don't even know if it still exists.
I haven't either.
I haven't seen it on my cable.
Anyway, if you get a chance, and I'm not plugging any of the services, but if you get a chance to see any of these classic rock albums, I think that's what they're called on Amazon, these classic rock album documentaries, It's really first of all, they're generally excellently produced, but the impact of MTV on a certain type of band, and Dire Straits was another one, although they were, you know, they hit it big before MTV, but that Money for Nothing video with that goofy animation, that was riveting to watch. It was like, you watch that because you'd never quite seen anything like it. The other one was "Play on Me," or what, I think that's the name of the song.
"Take on
Me." Pardon me.
"Take on Me."
"Take on Me." Thank you. Where they used the Rolleiflex.
Yep.
Animation, and again, it was riveting because it was something I'd never seen anything like that before, and to be able to not have to go into a theater for that kind of effect, to be able to, you know, pop it up on your television and watch it, was dramatic, and so the impact of that kind of creative movie making was significant, and these movies or these documentaries really capture that. So I'll highly recommend that.
So Lou,
I think that was the first music video I ever saw on MTV was Aha, Take on Me.
Yeah,
well, that one was on all the time.
Great. Yeah, I mean, and again, that was riveting just to watch the animation that they put in there. And you know, they dumped the storyline in the middle of it, and you caught the story just by watching the images. But the images were things you just didn't see normally, and you were going, "Holy cow!"
Yep.
So
the other one I remember from the early was days was Wendy O. Williams, who, you know, was kind of a thrash metal, but maybe a punk rocker, riding on a school bus. On top of a school bus, standing up like she like it was a horse or something, and crashing it into a wall of television sets. don't ask me what the meaning of that was. That one went the way of the armadillo. I saw that video, and I was going, "This means something." I'm not sure what it is, but it a little bit. I mean, some of the images were just images. Sweet Dreams Are Made of This, where they're out playing. You know, playing the cello and singing in a field of cows. I was pretty sure that was unrelated to the lyrics of the song, but hey.
Well, Lou, what do you think is going to happen when people of, say, the new generations actually read some of the lyrics from the songs of the 60s and 70s? Are they going to think those people were absolutely nuts? I mean, just reading this stuff. Even the city of New Orleans, White Bird, White Rabbit. I mean, you read those things and you go, what were these people on?
Well, or how did they get this in an era of relative censoriousness and you know, kind of sexual conformity? How did songs like "Take a Walk on the Wild Side" by Lou Reed get on?
Yeah, yeah.
With lyrics that were so explicit. The first time I heard it, which was 1970. Whenever it came out, 71 or whatever it was, 70, I said, what? you put that on the radio?
Well, you know, if you're not a, you probably are a fan, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about here this morning. I'm going to ask you about Tulips. I'm going to ask you about your hero, Bernie Madoff. But, you know, you watch some of these old shows and you get into some of the history of it. I was sort of surprised at what an amazing front runner bonanza was in terms of race relations, in terms of Indian American relations, those kinds of things, and some of the shows they had that were about those subjects back in those days. I mean, they were way ahead of their time.
Well, yeah, I just heard there's a book that's just come out. Oh shoot, I heard it being kicked around on Mad Dog Sports yesterday. I'll remember the title. Anyway, part of the discussion, it discussed a lot about the music scene and how certain records were made, and it did a lot of discussion of, there's a whole section on Linda Ronstadt and how she literally put the Eagles together. They were a backup band initially. But one of the things they talked about was Norman Lear and O'Connor and All in the Family, and how that show evolved into a social, you know, an open discussion of kind of social mores that, you know, there's nothing else like it on television, to have an openly bigoted character who was the focal point of the show and who provided a punching bag, obviously in the writing, a punching bag for the more liberal aspects of the writer's culture and American culture. What was the first? Julia, wasn't it? Wasn't that the first TV star or TV show with a major black leader? At least that was the way it was projected. I always thought that it was I Spy with Bill Cosby and Robert Culp.
Yeah, I did too.
Which I remember in the mid-60s. And, you know, It's interesting how race got approached then. The idea of it seemed like of Julia and to a lesser extent the Cosby Show in the 80s was moving on up, the black couple.
Jefferson.
The Jeffersons. Moving on.
The Jeffersons, thank you. And then Sanford and Son. It seemed, to a certain extent, there was some attempt to basically normalize black families and black, black interactions as just a slight variation of white, interactions and white families.
Well,
that's kind of, you know, we've moved way past that now.
Well, Amos and Andy was essentially the black Three Stooges.
Yes.
Well, you know, I love watching some of these old shows. You get them all on YouTube, but you know, it was really along those lines. And again, we got to talk about some of this other stuff. Was Gunsmoke, because none other. He just recently passed. None other than Burt Reynolds was essentially. Was he half Indian or whole Indian American Indian blacksmith? And was the target of incredible amount of abuse in the show because he was Indian or half Indian, and people didn't want an Indian shoeing their horses. He was also like the first guy I ever saw to let the pipes go on TV, because Bert had one hell of a body when he was younger, and he was befriended by, you know, Matt and Doc and Kitty, and they always stuck up for him and stuff. But he got his ass kicked a bunch of times just because he was Indian. Every time somebody got murdered, they thought it was him. I mean, the show was brutal in how people treated him. And in terms of, you know, what it was really, they didn't pull any punches at all, literally. I mean, no pun intended.
So that's an interesting comment. I wasn't a Gunsmoke fan, so I didn't follow that. But I did force my my wife and my, you know, my in-laws to watch The Searchers with John Wayne.
Oh, wow.
Have you ever seen that?
Oh, God, yeah. It's a dark movie. It's one of the best movies I've ever seen, but it's so dark you can only watch it once or twice.
Well, they were in shock because they had never seen it. And I said, this is, until Unforgiven, this is supposedly one of the, you know, maybe the top Western of all time. And they said, why? And I said, because it pulled, for the time anyway, the 50s, it pulled no punches about racism and sexism. And the kind of, you know, anger and hate that drove some people in that part of the country and at that time, because based on the things that happened, you know, the lynchings and everything else that were going on and the murders, you know, this was the kind of thing that people looked at each other that way. And, it was Houston's, sort of monumental achievement to put that movie together, but both of, you know, the people I was watching it with were really disturbed by it.
Well, Ron Howard said that was one of the top five acting performances. To stay that angry for 3 hours, John Wayne, it was unbelievable to never fall out of character.
No, he radiated menace and anger and frustration and everything else, and it was clearly racial, and I that movie, I mean, generally is considered a Western classic, but again, another one like that dealt with things way before you thought stuff like that was hitting the modern screen. I had the same feeling about In Harm's Way.
Okay,
with,
yeah.
Also with John Wayne,
yep.
Interestingly enough.
I read the book.
He doesn't play the bad guy in that movie.
I read the book.
But
the book is,
yeah,
is
well,
exactly the movie.
The movie is stunning.
Yeah.
To deal with rape and the kind of internal things that occurred in the military during World War II, in this case the Navy. That's another movie I can recommend to the.
Well, it brings up a lot of issues that we're dealing with today. In the sense that, just real briefly, Kirk Douglas is essentially the bad guy. He's John Wayne's assistant.
But he's not.
Well,
I mean, that's what's so interesting. He's Wayne's biggest defender.
But that's what I'm getting to. What I'm saying is, he's an obviously flawed human being. I mean, seriously flawed. He has issues with people of the opposite sex dramatically.
Well, it starts out with his wife having a open end, an open door affair, picking up some guy in a bar in at Pearl Harbor,
and then
getting killed in the in the raid. But I mean, just treats that absolutely openly, and then you see him, kind of go into the pits of despair until Wayne plucks him out of it and gets him, gets him on his feet again, and then he turns into a real bad guy.
But it was Maddie, the upshot of it, it's the things you. And I'm trying to bring up.
I don't want to ruin the movie for everybody who hasn't seen it and wants to watch it. But
the upshot of it is he's a very flawed person. Like turn out to be okay after the wife situation, but in terms of war, he ended up raping some girl. The whole bad guy. But when the ship got torpedoed, the guy managed to get the loss of life and injuries on the ship because of his actions was renowned about how many people were saved and how many people didn't die and damage control and all kinds of stuff. So in effect, if your kid was on that ship, you wanted that guy as your second in command. Yet as a person, not sure you wanted him in the Navy. These are the kind of conundrums because people aren't perfect. Well, they're just not. I mean, I'm not saying they're rapists. They're not. But I'm saying in terms of what he did for the Navy and John Wayne, he was spectacular. And the minute he left, he was in some brothel drunk. It was a bad thing.
Well, that's the theme, I think, of what I consider to be the best movie I've ever watched, and that's Unforgiven. Clint Eastwood's Western that won Best Picture in, 90 or 91. And one of the themes that comes out of that movie is that Clint Eastwood is a better man. He's certainly a more effective person, but he's a better man as this murderous, almost psychopathic gunslinger. And he's just not good at doing anything else. And he's at his best as a person when he's in that role. And I mean, that's a stunning thing to think about. But it's one of the many themes of that movie is at the end, you're confronted by the essence of this gunslinger, and you realize this is who he is, and this is him at his most effective as a person. And it's kind of a stunning revelation.
Well, Lou, we have a couple of minutes here before we get a break, and then we'll talk about all this other stuff after the break. Because I want to talk about Money for Nothing. We started this by, I want to ask you about Coinbase yesterday, what's happening with some of these stocks and the valuations. But if you watch, I don't know when it stopped, but if you watch the first year of Gunsmoke, maybe the second year, for some reason, I never watched back that far. I was too young, but I watched them in the first, I'm going to say the first year starts out with a Matt Dillon monologue for like a minute or two, essentially on Boot Hill, where, he's shot half the guys there, and he starts talking about what makes people behave in such a way where I have to shoot them because I don't like shooting them. what's wrong with these people? Why can't they let people alone? Why can't they learn? I mean, it is to put those together, you could put those on national TV right now, and TV, and you'd say, what is going on here? What with the violence we have in this country?
Well, that might be a worthwhile segue into a discussion in the next half hour about what is happening with the relation between cops and communities and why people are reacting in certain ways.
Well, not only that, and there's money involved. There's people being on TV involved. There's politics involved. There's people who want to run for office involved. There's people that want to get themselves on TV that are, quote, community people, so they get part of this largesse of money, the government. There's a zillion themes here, Lou. I mean, on every step. The older I get, the more I realize. But I also want to give you a 2-minute, summation of the tulip craze in Amsterdam. Tell you what, when you read this, you're going to think it was today. S&P futures up 18, NASDAQ futures up 91. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now, right now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. He's just my Weber on the board. S&P futures up 18 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures up 91. Everything is just up, up, up. Dow futures up 141. We've got some decent earnings here this morning. We've got some of the banks, Bank of America beat. Banks are, let's just say the banks got a lot of money. Let's just put it that way rather than go into it. Nikkei up 21 points, call that flat. Shanghai down 17.5%. Hang Seng down 107.4%. So not much going on over there. Europe DAX up 36.2. FTSE up 14.2. CAC around up 13.2. So 0.2 across the board. As a way of review, yesterday Dow was up 53. The S&P was down 17, NASDAQ was down 138, so a mixed day. Bonds, 1.61, that's minus 2 basis points. The Bund minus 1 basis point at minus 0.27 in Japan, positive 0.09. We've got oil up over $62, well, it's actually down under 63 where it made it yesterday. It was up 5% yesterday. 62.96, down 19 cents. Brent, down 13 cents, 65.45. Natural gas down 3 cents at 258. RBOB unchanged at 203, but up over 2 bucks. Gold up 10.50 to 17.46. Silver up 7 cents, 25.59. Copper up 4 cents, 4.16. Wow. We've Freeport Mac brand, it keeps running up. Well, finally got some of that for people. He's got a little bit of it. So I don't feel so bad when I watch you up every day now since I have some of it. much easier, Betty, when you see something go up when you have some.
Just, absolutely.
Just saying. And crypto, 62,382 at Bitcoin, 547. It's up 547 bucks. We had Coinbase came out yesterday, traded up and traded back down again. But it's one of the top, I think it's one of the top 50 highest valued companies now, Betty, after like one day. I don't know, that story's going to be ongoing, I think. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
34 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone
out there.
That's right. A no-hitter last night. We'll get to that in just a moment. As far as traffic is concerned, we are off to a pretty good start. It looks like no issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower all quiet. Stevenson quiet for the most part, although you'll see some traffic volumes pick up as you approach downtown. No issues on the Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford. A couple of crashes in the area. One in Joliet, I-80 eastbound, just before Richards Street. That's exit 133. There is a crash that's causing congestion. And then out in Wheaton, in the western suburbs, there is a crash that just went away on my screen. I'm trying to get it back.
It beamed up. We got beamed up.
Route 59 at Roosevelt Road. There is a crash right there. Weather today, clouds early and then some sunshine later on. Much colder today, just similar to yesterday afternoon. A high of just 50. Right now it's overcast and 40 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 83. Right now it's clear and 66. In sports, the White Sox scored a bunch of runs early and then watched Carlos Rodon take a perfect game into the ninth inning. He ended up beaning a hitter. But still held on to get the no-hitter.
If you hit him on the foot, is it beating him?
Well, you still hit him.
Yes.
White Sox beat Cleveland 8-0, and Rodon tosses a no-no. I'm going to pull up the
box. Of course,
box
he was seriously bitching
here
at the guy going to first base as well. He didn't move his foot.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I didn't get to see the game. I assume it went super late, too.
Well, he 115 pitches. That's not much for nine innings.
That's true. Rodon finished with, let's see here, 7 strikeouts, no walks, the one-hit batter, and 114 pitches to get the no-hitter. So
it was over before 10 o'clock, which is...
That's not bad at all.
Yeah.
Cubs lost 2 of 3 in Milwaukee as they were blown out yesterday afternoon. 7-0 was the final in that one. Diamondbacks were off. They're at the Nationals tonight. NBA basketball, Bulls lost at home to the Magic 115-106 as they're watching their playoff hopes dwindle here down the stretch. Blackhawks were off. They're in the thick of a playoff race, too. They're at Detroit tonight to take on the Red Wings. That's a 6:30 p.m. puck drop. Coyotes lost to the Wild 5-2. Chief.
This guy to the Cubs, or the Cubs, the Bulls got to play center. He looks like he's doing real well. He hustles his ass off, and he looks like a natural leader. And the guy who's behind him had a big game last night. He plays defense, everything. Are those guys just not leaders or what? You would think their example would run off, but it doesn't.
I think there's a couple things. One, I think that it's a flawed roster right now because they do not have a point guard at all. And the point guard position is the most important position in basketball. I don't care if you're playing high school, college, NBA, you have to have one. Someone that can control the ball. And LeBron is a point guard, even though he's 6'8", and it really helps. And, you know, the great teams have a guy that can be a ball-dominant guy, that can get other people involved, that can make a shot if you need him to, et cetera. The Bulls don't have that. That hurts them. Two, I do think it takes more than, you know, 5 or 10 games to get used to playing to each other because they completely overhaul their roster. Half their guys from the beginning of the season are gone.
Well, plus he comes in with the subs, it's a whole new team.
Right, and they brought in, you know, 5 new guys. Now, I think Vucevic, the guy you're talking about, is awesome. He's an all-star, 2-time all-star. He's in his prime. He's a great passer, great rebounder, hustles, can score, can make the three if you need him to, but he's better on the block. I really like him. Zach LaVine was an all-star this year. You know he can score. He's still got to play better defense. But they don't have any sort of ball handler right now. They're trying to start Satoransky, and who is not a starter. He's a good, solid backup. Kobe White is not a point guard because he's more of a scoring guard that can come off the bench and get
his turnovers are dramatic.
And his turnovers are dramatic. Yeah, he turns it over like crazy. So they're really struggling because they get late into these games and the other team has a point guard that can really get guys in the right position and set guys up to get good shots, and the Bulls just don't have that right now. So I think that's going to be priority number one in the offseason is to try to get a real pass-first point guard.
I'm gonna be very quick with this, but just... And I'm not going to lead the witness here, Lou, because that's what you do as an attorney. But I'm just going to discuss
only,
here.
Only when I'm allowed to.
Yes, only when you're allowed to. I'm going to discuss here just a little bit the tulip bulb mania in Holland. Now, I'm not going to ask anybody to become a flower person.
Was this like the 1600s, 1700s?
1736. Evidently, they were
the bulbs basically became a substitute for money.
Well, no, they were items of value. They came from Turkey. The upper class had them. Then the lower class decided they want some too because it showed that you were coming on up in the world, moving on up, just like George. And evidently it took 7 to 10 years for you to plant a seed for the bulb to do something, but they found a way where you can actually plant the bulbs and plant seeds on the bulbs, whatever. By the same time, tulips were known to be notoriously fragile. It can scarcely be transplanted, let alone even kept alive, without careful cultivation. But they refined the techniques to grow and produce. However, they decided that the tulips could grow from seeds or bulbs that grew on the mother bulb. So the bulb that grew from seed would take 7 to 12 years before flowering, but a bulb itself could flower the very next year. So that when you notice where your neighbor's putting bulbs in the ground, that's essentially what they're doing. But it got to Holland in 1934. The rage among the Dutch to possess tulip bulbs was so great the ordinary industry of the country was neglected, and the population even to its lowest dregs, I guess that's us, embarked on the tulip trade. I get a lot of this, man.
No, that would be the lawyers.
Yeah. But now there's some stuff in here that I think people should pick out. The single bulb could be worth as much as 4,000 or even 5,500 florins. And the florin was the gold coin of the... But you can't really value the florin because they were sort of uncertain weight. But here's something that Mr. Weber could figure out. Give us a point of relevance. 4 tons of beer, 1,008 gallons of beer... went for 32 florins. So one flower was going for 4,000 to 5,000. So just as some kind of an idea, one bulb was going for 6 times of somebody's year's salary. So here's an interesting one to pick out. Not saying, just not making any kind of comment.
Out here in Colorado, the land of the craft brewery, we would say that reflected a badly distorted sense of priority.
Yes, absolutely. Now, by 1936, the demand of the tulip trade was so large, now I'm not saying anything about Coinbase sitting in the market yesterday, that regular marts for their sale were established on the Stock Exchange of Amsterdam, Rotterdam, and other places. So the thing was, things were trading so much, they managed to make it onto these stock exchanges, all right? It was at that time the professional traders, stock jobbers, read Coinstar, got in on the action, and everybody appeared to be making money simply by processing some of the bulbs. Sort of like processing the Bitcoin, right? This is like reading yesterday's paper, or today's paper. Indeed, it seemed at the time that the price could only go up, that the passion for tulips would last forever. People began buying tulips here's the key point. People began buying tulips with leverage, using margin derivative contracts to buy more than they could afford. Now, I think there are places, although I can't, I mean, I've heard, but I couldn't point one at you, that there are people that are buying some of this Bitcoin on leverage. Now, where they're getting at, I don't know, but I've heard that they are. Now, whether this Coinstar is going to allow people to do that, I don't know. I'm not accusing them of that. But by the end of the year 1937, prices began to fall and never looked back. A large part of this rapid decline was driven by the fact that people had purchased bulbs on credit, hoping to repay their loans when they sold their bulbs for profit. But once prices started their decline, holders were forced to liquidate, to sell their bulbs at any price, and to declare bankruptcy in the process. Hundreds who, a few months previously, begun to doubt there was such a thing as poverty in a land suddenly found themselves possessors of a few bulbs which nobody would buy, even at prices one-fourth of what they paid. By 1938, tulip prices had returned to from whence they came. Now, is that
1738, right?
1638.
Okay.
Does that sound remotely similar?
So it was in the 1600s.
Yeah.
That's what I asked you,
yeah.
And you said 1700s.
Alluded. I said...
No, in the very beginning, I said, was it in the 1600s?
And I must have misheard you. No, started in 1634, and it was all over in 1638. And at one point, one bulb traded as much as a spectacular house from a rich person. I think I'd take the house.
Yes.
Saying. So it's not like this has never happened before, Lou. You know, because then tulip bulbs were considered way more valuable than gold or money, just like Bitcoin, you know? When you, at the end of the day, you drop down to the value, and Milton Friedman said it a couple times in class. All currency eventually makes it down to its, its innate value. So if it's gold, it becomes the value of gold. If it's silver, if it's nothing, it's nothing. Right? So when we ask somebody about what is Bitcoin worth, the answer inevitably is, what's your fiat currency worth? All right? And it's somewhat of an okay answer, but at least you got a government behind one and not the other.
I've never been a fan of Bitcoin for two reasons. Number one, I don't really understand how the value on it is generated. And so if you can't explain it to me, then as I've demonstrated repeatedly on this show, fiscally illiterate. If you can't explain how it gets its value, then in a credible way, then I'm not interested in it. And number two, it just seems totally ephemeral. And so, I mean, you know, there's nothing that goes back to the not understanding its value. It wavers too much. There doesn't seem to be anything behind it, except the willingness of a certain group of people to say, yeah, I'll accept this in exchange for something else.
Well, let me ask you a question, Lou. Do you ever have a, that's a perfect boat for you, by the way. Do you ever have a boat called a Hacker Craft?
I don't think so.
They are the creme de la creme of wooden boats that are still made. They were made
like a Chris Craft.
A super high-end Chris Craft.
Okay.
Yeah. So back in the day, there was an outfit called Hacker Craft. And they made boats, and I think they went out of business. I'm not sure. Somebody, I think, bought the tooling and did something, and they were in the business of, if you brought them basically a busted-up Hacker Craft, they would rebuild your boat to the point where people were bringing in, like, a chunk of the back end, and people were, and they were rebuilding the boat for you, right? But their status, their story, and they were sticking to it as was, is we only rebuild, like, damaged boats. So finally some guy walked in one day and he said, hey, look, the last guy brought you like one piece of wood and you built the boat. Stop kidding yourself. Why don't you just build me a Hacker Craft? And finally they looked at each other and said, okay. And they did, right? Now where I'm going with this is we have all kinds of stocks, and I'm not going to name them because I, in my opinion, when you start getting a company that's worth, it's never made a dime, it's worth, you know, $100 billion or some ridiculous number, or $200 billion and they're 100 times revenue. There's never been an earnings anywhere. Yesterday we talked about some company that the SPAC things. What were we talking about, Maddie? Where the you give somebody, a bunch of people, money. Russell was talking about it, with the idea they might come up with an idea someday and spend the money, right? So we've done. What's the difference, Lou, really, between some company trading for $300 a share that's worth one, and not even having a company? It just putting a name out there like Bitcoin, let's just bid on Bitcoin. Why do you even need something behind it? There's something behind these other places is useless as well. I mean, it's not much of a stretch, really.
I agree. I mean, this was the my experience with the .com bubble in the late 90s and early aughts, where you had people getting venture funding for concepts. I remember sitting in a meeting, again, as an attorney, listening to this guy describe this .com product and, you know, looking for venture funding. And I asked one of the principals, exactly what is this thing going to do? This application or this, you know, the search engine or whatever it is he's putting together, exactly what is its product going to be? At the end of the day, when you buy one of these things or you get one of these things, whatever it is, what's it going to do? And nobody could give me a rational explanation in 25 words or less. And I thought, well, this is a product that's a vaporware. There's nothing behind it. And I think it's the same kind of thing you're talking about, where, you know, we come in. Yeah. Everybody wants to scramble to get into this. You know, I want to invest in a .com company. I want to invest in something new, and yet when you sit them down and say, okay, exactly what is it you're buying, you can't get an explanation. That's the, you know, that's sort of my marker for don't know, whatever you want to call it, a tulip panic or whatever.
Well, yeah, because I mean, when you think about it, I mean, sometimes you have to. One thing I think that serves me in reasonable good stead, and I mean not all the time, Lou, because I miss a lot of stuff, obviously. When you watch the Shark Tank thing with those goofballs that are on there, I mean, a lot of them are you know, real bright people. But you go out there and you basically hawk their product, and they trying to get these people to invest. It's what's his name? It's Barbara Cochran and what's his name? Mr. Wonderful, and the four people that go out. Actually, Mark Cuban's on there once in a while. But when you think about it, you say that's a that's an American sort of thing. You walk out with an idea, you try and sell your idea, and if people think it's a good idea, they provide the financing. Because the people, that's the whole part about investing. The people with the ideas don't always have the money, don't always have the land, don't always have, you know, the building. The people with the building want people to have ideas, so they're willing to rent their building and give them money for the, I mean, that's the way the economy works. There's a flow to it, right? I mean, which you'd like to have. But what would you think of if all of a sudden on Shark Tank or any other show like that, you get Matty Weber walking out there and say, "My name is Matty Weber. I'm a good-looking guy. I can talk to anybody. I can be your designated drinker for the biggest company on earth. I should have been a lobbyist. By the way, just give me $100 million and I'll figure out what to do with it." They'd look at you like you're from Mars. And yet, it's just what we were talking about yesterday. These companies, you're giving people money, and then they have the ability to go out and find something, and then they let you know what they found. And I guess you get a chance to pull out if you want. But still, it's like, who would even think of such a thing, that the person would come before the idea? Right? I mean...
Oh, I've seen that happen, though. I've probably seen that happen half a dozen times in my lawyer dealings. And again, I wasn't a business attorney. I wasn't structuring deals. I was usually coming in on the toward the end of it to manage the employment side of it and make sure nobody was violating federal law. But at some point, I would frequently have a conversation with either one of the other lawyers, one of the other business lawyers, or one of the clients, and say, exactly what are we doing here? Because, you know, as an employment lawyer, you're going to worry about that stuff. What are we bringing people in to do? But from an investment perspective, exactly what are you turning out here? And, you know, a lot of times it was, we really like this guy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, wasn't that Theros, the blood testing company with that attractive CEO?
But she also got, who were the people on her board? Wasn't it like a bunch of 90-year-old, wasn't it like, Was Storman Norman on the board, or some Schwartz? What's this, Schwarzkopf? Or there were. I think Kissinger was on it, wasn't he?
I think so.
Yeah.
And you know, where was the it that they were doing? And you know, again, we reach back now to our friend Mr. Madoff, who passed away yesterday. I mean, wasn't that Bernie Schtick, basically selling himself as a as the guy to give money to?
Well, but he also was making money when nobody else was. In the vernacular, Bernie had an angle, right? But you know, about the same time, and I'll keep this brief as I can, I was doing some work for Nancy Sheehan, who was running for Democratic Treasurer of Illinois, right? And not only did we want her to win, I mean, Nancy's a terrific lady, she ended up being a judge. She didn't win, but she came pretty close, and everybody else got trounced. Dawn Clark Netsch was running for governor. Anyway, she ended up losing, but we decided we were going to run a different type of campaign, that we were actually going to put together a position paper on everything that the treasurer does, which actually isn't very much. And, of course, I go for my first meeting, and I'm thinking, what am I even doing here? I get invited. Well, I found out what I was doing here. I was going to write the finance piece. And I don't know that much about fixed income, but I learned. And there's really not much you can do as a treasurer, because you can only spend money on U.S. government securities, right? So if you're the treasurer of Iowa, or Matty would be since he's from Iowa, and I'm the treasurer of Illinois, I might kick your ass by a tenth of a basis point 1 year because I bought 2-year notes and you bought 4-year notes, But the next year, you're going to kick my ass by a tenth of a basis point. But we're all hanging in the same game. We're all making 2.7, 2.9, 3 points. Because we're in the same swimming pool. All of a sudden, there's two people, as I go through this huge list of everybody in the country, all of a sudden, there's two outliers. There's two idiots that are making, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10%. And I'm going, who the bleep are these guys? Of course, it was the chump from Orange County, California, and the guy from Harris County, Texas. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. How could they be doing the same thing they want me to do here, where the most I can make is three, if I'm really good and scalp a 2 year to a 5 year and make a few bucks on the scalp, I can make it 3.1. How the hell am I going to get 9 or 10? I mean, they got to be doing something different. I mean, there's got to be more risk here someplace. I mean, and I'm just a dummy going through this my first time. Now, Bernie was at a time when the markets, you know, people who were doing, you know, big returns and reversals, conversions, and those kinds of trades in the SPX and so forth, are making a 3-4% return. All of a sudden, Bernie's saying he's making 10. Right now, so, but Bernie had an angle. He had some chumps that he was making money at. Well, yeah, the chumps turned out to be those people that believed in him. But the weird part of it is, if you listen to this, it's everything that you ever thought was wrong about the business, Lou. This was a hedge fund. So it was a carve out from the act. And a hedge fund means you have to be a qualified client. Means you got to make over 250 grand a year, or have, I should know this on top of my head, so, or $3 million or $2 million. There's double qualified and whatever, super qualified. Anyway, so Bernie's people were all super qualified people. But the idea being that you didn't have to go through a securities firm like PTI. You said that these people were too sophisticated that they could go around essentially the regulations and join a hedge fund. That's what a hedge fund does. Hedge fund doesn't hedge necessarily. It gets high end people that say they have their own attorneys, and this SEC stay out of my way.
Well, so and again, let's make sure we're clear. Bernie was selling his, for lack of a better term, Jewish trustworthiness.
Yes, yes. In Jewish country clothes, basically.
Yes.
But the nature of a lot of his, the people who supposedly lost all this money, Lou, if you gave Bernie $1 million and one day Bernie sent you a statement saying you had 10 there when you never did, and all of a sudden one day you've got zero, of course, his group says they lost 10 when they really lost one, because they only put up one. So a lot of people wanted to get paid from the high point of the phony statement that Bernie sent them. Well, that's interesting, right? I mean, that doesn't fly in most societies. But the interesting part is, because of the hue and cry and some of the people who got involved in this, plus you had to really know somebody just to get in. You couldn't just call Bernie and say, "Here's $1 million." Oh no, you gotta make sure you know the right. This is really tough to get in. What's compounded it even more is some people got their money back, which leads me to believe that the Russian mob and stuff was involved in this, because some people got their money back and actually made money.
Wasn't it the early investors?
Well, not all. That's the part. I mean, it was very selective. Who was the guy they found dead in the swimming pool? He got a lot of his money back, right? I mean, there's more to this than meets the eye. This was an underworld thing. There's more than just some guy with a Ponzi scheme. But the interesting part is the way he was able to do this, now PTI or any other place you invest in, we clear through IB or RBC. We don't have your money. We don't get to do the statements. But Bernie had his own clearing firm. So yep. Bernie actually produced the statements. So he was able to give you false statements. Now, the interesting part is, because this is a carve-out under the act, the hue and cry that lands, they ended up paying a lot of these people. I think they paid them some SIPC. And they were not, they absolutely were not covered by SIPC. This was a hedge fund. Yet firms like PTI, our SIPC fees went up and remain up to this day to pay for some of Bernie's people. Why? Why should my people who are PTI, why should we pay for people in a hedge fund that basically flipped their nose at the SEC and said, we don't want no sneaking SEC looking at our stuff. We're big enough people. We got our own attorneys. We'll do it ourselves. Why should I ever pay for that? Not that
because they know people who know people.
That's right.
I mean, that's all that is.
So, I mean, if you look at this from the top down, there's arrows flying out on anybody. In the last half hour, we're going to talk more about Bernie's. Bernie's the guy in the midst of this whole mess and these people losing money. Bernie invented payment for order flow, and the industry could never say, Bernie, stop it. They never could. If I heard 100 times, Lou, when I was on the board of the SIBO, well, you know, we don't like this payment for order flow, but that horse is out of the barn, and we don't know if we can get him back. That's why regulators, to me, from not individually, I'm sure they're fine people and trying to. Regulators, to me, from day one, Lou, were useless in any of this stuff. They could never anticipate the next crisis. They could never head it off. They could never do anything. And then when something happens, they go back and flay the people who were innocent to start with. How jaundiced of a version is that of it? But I'm not that wrong. Do you think? You do think I'm wrong? All right. Are you still here? We lose Lou? Maybe?
We must have. Surprising, with 1 minute left.
Yeah, with 1 minute left. But I mean, you look at this whole thing. Why wasn't Bernie stopped when he was a Cincinnati Stock Exchange guy doing payment for order flow in the early 90s? I mean, why didn't people say, you can't do that? What are you doing? And then they come down on the side of, quote, disclosure. I'm ranting, but the last half hour, I'm going to give a little bit of history of Bernie Madoff from my perspective. SP Futures up 23 now, NASDAQ Futures up 114. Some pretty good earnings. Come back with Mr. Dan Janitas. He always has some good ideas, some good companies. Can't wait for that. Be right back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Lord, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. You're just on the board. SP Futures up 23. NASDAQ Futures up 115. Dan, how are you? Mr. Dan Janitas, welcome.
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So, just saying, for the last 6 months, instead of working your fanny off like I know you do, finding the deal of the century and the rose among the thorns, why didn't you just go buy some Coinbase and and play golf.
I'm still a little leery of that one, but I'm happy with our performance. We had a nice doing our year-to-date numbers, our first quarter numbers coming in 25-30% for our average client, so quite a bit ahead of the certainly way ahead of the bond index, and as well as all the equity indices. So we, you know, having a good year here, the work is paying off.
I think you're doing spectacular. I just, what are these guys that bought into this Coinbase at what, 20 cents or something? They made $4.6 billion yesterday or something. Isn't that a lot easier than working as hard as you and I do?
just a few people.
just a tad. And I bet our handicap would be a lot better, too. Our golf
handicap. Yeah. No, I mean, we've really been pleased. I mean, part of it is that we're at the sweet spot of what we do right now. You know, the later stage of the business cycle, we tend to do very well. The extra homework right now on the, you know, the research on the companies that we invest in, it's making a huge difference right now. This is not necessarily a market to just to park cash in a CD, an ETF, although we will do that, and we do think it makes sense in certain cases. But, this is a stock picker's market, and this is where you can really be a big winner or a big loser. And our names are really holding in there. They're, you know, steady eddies. We still like the preferred area, those preferred stocks like Blue Knight and Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment are, you know, giving you a nice 9%+ return, and you don't have to worry about, you know, the swings of the 10-year treasury. Interesting, we have not seen a lot of swings in the 10-year treasury.
No, we have not.
Despite a lot of the rhetoric, we've seen, you know, it come in a little. We have seen the yield curve continue to steepen, which, you know, a lot of it is I think trying to get a sense of when the Fed is going to respond, what it's going to take for the Fed to respond. But in the meantime, we're kind of on the sidelines, if you will, from playing in the Treasury market, especially the middle part of it, or the longer end, definitely. We still think there can be more. We're going to see yields go higher. We do think inflation is going to come in still. There's signs of it already, but there, you know, we kind of have these two forces. One sign is coming in. We have like Janet Yellen saying, you know, throw as much liquidity in the system. And then we have others saying, let's be careful about inflation here. And I think we also have, you know, as we all know, some of the big questions are what are going to happen with taxes, you know, what's going to happen with this infrastructure bill. Our belief is that the part of the infrastructure bill that gets the most popularity and most support is going to be the road buildings, the expanding the tech and 5G and getting internet more up to speed. And the names that we have participated in that we've spoken about, like MasTec, is one that does really well. It's more than a double since we've started talking about it, and it's not a high growth stock, but they're just in the right place at the right time. And it's a company that's been around for a while, really good management team, really good to their shareholders, doing all the right things, just have the right talent, the right skill in an area that's going to continue to see a lot of growth in the future. And that's one of the few areas that I can say is, you know, with a lot of confidence that's going to get support from the government as well. We talked last week about a couple other names, you know, one there right there in Chicago. We actually met with management yesterday, virtually. Federal Signal, which is a specialty truck business, but they had started out as a doing sirens for the police cars and all that. And another one is as Aztec, ticker symbol ASTE, based in Chattanooga. They do a lot of the main focus of the work is asphalt and aggregates and anything that really supports the construction of roads, bridges. So these are businesses that will do well in any type of infrastructure plan. We are going to get one, and hopefully it is going to be heavily based on, you know, it's going to be true infrastructure, and that I think that's where we're going to get agreement. And again, it's, you know, it's a question of timing, but if you hang in there, these are names that are, that I think are poised to continue to do well, in this environment. In the right place at the right time.
Dan, how do you, when you look at, when right now we just talked earlier about, we got into MTVs about, you know, money for nothing and your chicks for free, right? I mean, clearly the money is for nothing in some areas. I mean, some of the valuations are absolutely to the moon, and I think some of the spots you are in, as soon as people figure out that there's going to be some business there, I'm going to guess that these companies are going to go a lot higher than even you thought they were, because there's no limit now, it appears to me, in the amount of money in the margin, especially the margin loans are, what, are back to record highs or closer. I was reading something about that. And there's no limit to how much money people can throw at something right now. Between the Fed, you know, what is it, $4 billion a day they're pouring in the system is landing on somebody's desk to spend. You also have, but you also have a situation where, you know, corresponding to it, I was just going through the history of the tulip mania, of all things, and you also have a situation where, you know, the even the Bitcoins of the world now are big enough money to where if something were to happen there. I mean, the stuff you're in, just off the top of my head, you're talking about preferreds, you know, 7, 8, 9%, companies that are, even if there is no infrastructure bill, are still going to do as well as they did last year or better. I mean, you're in a place where you should be relatively isolated. But at some point, do you say, these guys could screw this up to the point where I don't care what you're in, you could be in the, you know, in the water business and you're not isolated enough. Are you sensing any of that kind of danger yet? I mean, I'm sensing that we're, some of these companies, if they go from 300 to like 30, like somebody might value them, I don't know that anybody is not touched by that. I think your places will be touched very little, but to say that, you know, it won't be touched at all, I don't know. How do you even determine the risk? Because I think the places you're talking about have no specific risk on their own. That doesn't mean...
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think the one thing that we look at ourselves as, you know, one of the unique analytics that we use, which is really more of a qualitative, I think it's more qualitative than quantitative, but it's really looking at management and how does management weather tough periods and how have they done when their industry is down and how... You know, how stable is their outlook, and how have they done with acquisitions, and how have they done on the financial side? Are they shareholder friendly? So we spend a lot of time meeting with and analyzing management and looking at the history of management, and that's what, like, you know, I would say that's what helps me sleep at night, knowing that I have a conversation with the CEO of one of these companies, even though their industry might be under pressure, even though there may have been some news that came out that would be negative for them. They're a company, and I learned this early on in my career, and I remember as a high-yield bond manager looking at AK Steel and owning AK Steel and making money in AK Steel and just thinking that here's an industry at one point that just wasn't doing well. And when you were looking at the economy turning in the early 90s and you just couldn't see a whole lot, well, these guys made it through, and they didn't have to go through a Chapter 11. They managed their business well, and so then they came flying out of this, you know, into the next environment that was positive, and they benefited. They were already, you know, they already had a clean balance sheet. Well, recently, now years and years later, that same company, right before, just a year and a half ago, they refinanced the bonds right before we had, I don't know how they timed this, but before we had the COVID collapse or the, you know, the pandemic, last year, they were able to refinance their debt and clean up some of their debt. And I don't know how they did it, but it's those companies and those management teams and those ones that are focused on keeping debt down, paying down debt, you know, cash flow, looking at new ideas, but looking to buy them cheaply when they're making acquisitions, looking at, you know, buying at the right price, financing it in a way that's not going to hurt your bondholders or your shareholders. And so those things, I think, are the things that differentiate these companies in this environment. A new management team in a new industry is going to be hard to, it's going to be hard to evaluate.
We'll
have to evaluate it, but that's why that's not really our thing. Doesn't mean we won't invest in that area, but you really have to get to know the team. You have to take a little bit of extra time to get to know the people making the decisions, and you know those are really the people that you're counting on.
I know as always, that's why I love talking to you. We always talk about the same subject on two different chessboards.
Right. I mean, two different ways of getting there.
Wait, because you're looking at a company that says, "All right, these guys, from their perspective, for you getting your 8 or 9% return on your preferred, these guys are competent, and guess what? They're going to sell. They're going to find a way to always send you the check. So it's a solid investment on your part, and that's what you're saying. And I'm with you 100%. What I'm talking about is whatever the company is. It's Dan just found XYZ, and they're paying all this stuff out. And even Dan, who's conservative, is pretty much, I think you are, is going to say, okay, XYZ really is worth, even though we're not buying the common stock, is worth $50 a share. Wow, looks to me like it just traded 105. No matter what, the person who buys XYZ at that point is paying $55 of something. Whether it's too much margin, whether it's too much something, whether it's too much money in the system, there's risk not in the company themselves, which you're looking at, you know, saying these guys, for my client who's got the preferred stock, I don't really care if the stock, well, I care, but I'd rather not see the common go from 105 to 50, but the management is acting in a way where they're doing all the right things. They don't really control the stock price, but by the way, whoever the chump is that just bought it at 105 has got some risk there. I mean, I think I'm saying we're kind of on two different paths. I'm saying right now the market has dramatic risk in that, in my opinion. Some stocks, not all.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And I think again, by nature, we're going to tend to look at those stocks that don't have that inflated premium, if you will, that inflated premium that I think is market driven and, like you said, is liquidity driven. When you see things running up, just because there's liquidity in the market and there's money chasing after it, you have to be able to differentiate, you know, really the true fundamental value of the company or where the company should be trading and how much of this is momentum and how much of this is a super liquid market that, you know, if there was something to turn here, those names that are inflated were going to be the ones that I think get hit the most. I mean, even this year is an example. Even what we've seen in some of the tech names is a really good example of what you're talking about, is that the air was let out of some of the names when there was some concerns that this, you know, we may not have the, we weren't sure, and we still don't know what's going to happen in terms of taxes and the bill and all that, the infrastructure bill, but, you know, the debt that's coming on and all that, and I think there is that, there has to be a, regrouping, or what I would call just sort of, I would get all those names out of my portfolio, if I start seeing that inflation, the inflated value of that premium not making sense to me. If it doesn't make sense based on what's going on. And I do agree with you that is an issue and will continue to be an issue as we go through this period of, you know, one day, everything looks great and everyone's getting vaccinated and then the next day there's some news that may not be as positive on the vaccine side, or there may be some news that's not as positive on the infrastructure bill side, it's not getting through, or, you know, so I think staying with names, our strategy, staying with names that are going to be not immune to that, but they're going to be more immune to that than the names everyone's chasing.
Well, Dan, without getting into, I guess, well, I am walking right into, without getting into us, the quagmire that I'm just about to walk into, you would hope, I would think you and I, if we're hoisting a cold one, we would say, right now the best thing that could happen for all of us is for the people to just kind of cool their jets on this money creation kind of thing, and let's just hang in here for a year or two, and let's let the economy grow into the prices to where we don't have some huge collapse, don't have a problem, and that 2 years from now, we're going to say, hey, this company was trading 100 when it was worth 50. Guess what? It really is worth 100 now because things are that much better. I don't sense any, in my read of history, going back to the tulips last night, I don't sense any whatsoever ability on the part of, not just saying the stooges we have in office, but the stooges that have been in office since the 1600s, to have that discussion and stop it on their own. They never stop it until there's a problem, because they get slapped from the outside. It's like you never come home until your old man's behind you and boots you in the ass. I mean, are these people children? I mean, what is the deal here? I mean, why can't they say, boy, we just spent three times as much as the income tax we took in last year. We can't do that again next year. They're going to do more. I mean, they're not even beginning to think what you and I are talking about.
Yeah, I think it's more of just the lack of knowledge in this area. Like, they're not experts in this area. They haven't seen and been through the tough times. They maybe have, but they weren't paying attention. You know, they may have been paying attention to something else at the time. They don't really understand the repercussions. What they don't get is the way the market trades, which is what we get. They don't understand, you know, decisions in the market and the market trading a certain way based on information that comes to us. It's the scary part to me is people that are making these decisions that really don't have the background to be making them. I'm hopeful that they're getting at least some guidance from people who do have some of that background. But I think that's the difference, you know, and that's what we have to determine every day is here's what's going on out there and, you know, in the world of the government, and then we have to say, hey, we're looking at these investments and how much of what they're doing is going to impact our investments and how much of it is built in and how much of it is you know, you might want to call it gravy or some sort of added premium that you're getting for this. Yeah, some people want to play that market, if you will. I don't. I want to be putting money with people in investment vehicles that are going to perform well because the people at the top really know what they're doing.
Well, Dan, I like what you're doing because you're looking at, because I mean, when I was 19 years in the OEX pit, so for me, you know, the market is, you know, was the OEX, now it's the S&P or it's the Qs, and we got some other stuff in there right now. And you have stuff that I think can dodge the machine gun when it goes off, if it goes off. I'm not saying when, if. But clearly in the OEX, if all of a sudden, you know, Dan Janinas goes in and says, screw this, and starts selling, you know, SPOOs, S&P futures, or comes in and buys 5,000 puts, I don't care if 100 Dan Janinas's think that McDonald's is the world's best stock, and if I get to buy the futures down 20 points and sell my basket, McDonald's is going. I don't care if McDonald's is going to show up with a gold bar for me for my house. It doesn't matter. I'm selling it. So I mean, you're away from that to a certain extent, to a huge extent, which I think is good for you, and I try and be that for some of my people. But other people, to try and sit there and say, oh, Caterpillar will hang in there if the market drops 30%, hey, get a grip. It's not going to. I mean, right? I mean, I don't think.
And one thing we do, which is, you know, I think what all portfolio managers should do, but one thing we do is correlation between assets, and that's, we do correlation analysis all the time with anything new that we bring in and what, anything that we're taking out. And, you know, we look at correlation within the portfolio, but we also look at it through the various indices. And you know, we want, that's the risk, that, and we want to understand that risk. We want to understand how we can eliminate some of that risk, or at least diminish some of that risk through having, you know, through correlation, through proper correlation, and you know, understanding covariance and all that, and understanding how things work together when you put them together in a portfolio. But I think the point that you made, the other point you made that I agree with, is we're in this sort of saturated environment, you know, with all this liquidity. And one name I was going to mention earlier is a bond that still, I think, has a good yield. I mentioned it before. It's a Meritrust Financial. It's a property casualty insurance company. That bond is trading like water right now, but it's a private company. So you go back 5 or 10 years when you were in a different environment, certainly 10 years, that bond would not be trading with this amount of liquidity. But because it's a private deal, and because we're in this environment that's liquid and people are chasing yield, there's a two-sided market in this bond every day. And that type of liquidity, when you were talking about when it's liquidity is shut off, or when that turns, what's going to happen to names like this? Well, they may sell off. They may be more difficult to sell if you own them. The liquidity dries up, and then that becomes an issue. We're nowhere near there right now. But
no, we definitely are not.
that could be a concern too down the road.
What? Just a quick question, since you know more about these insurance companies than I do, but I'm watching sporting events and since they went off patent, you don't have to listen to the Viagra and the Cialis commercials so much. Although I used to really like those commercials because I never could figure out where that lady bought her luggage. I never saw luggage that nice. I mean, I'm like, how much was that a bag? Not only did they have the best looking 50-year-old woman ever on earth on those commercials, but she always had luggage that, it had to be $100,000 worth of luggage. I mean, you had to have serious luggage capability.
Only you noticed the luggage with the hot girl standing there.
But it was not your Samsonite. I'll go on a trip with you, but here's what you need to buy me just to pack my stuff. You know, plus the one, man, you had to remember the one where the lady had about 17 bags and the guy had one briefcase. Anyway, they've been pretty much replaced, and wasn't football, Manny, $50 million a year or something?
It was a huge part of their advertising revenue.
Yeah.
But now they've all been taken over by insurance companies. How much money do these people make, Dan? I mean, there's the Progressive guy, the guy with the bird. Who are those guys?
It's all cell phones and insurance.
Yeah, cell phones and insurance.
Geico, Progressive on the insurance side, and then AT&T is everywhere.
Well, who's the guy with the mustache, the insurance company? And then there's the
oh, then State Farm. Yeah.
No. He's State Farm is Jake.
State Farm, yeah, right.
The Admiral or whatever the hell he is, the guy with the big huge mustache.
They're all general. Yeah,
general.
Yeah. Well, I think what they're all doing though, is they're all making money. They, at least from my, just from my personal point of view, I've seen a lot of these amendments to the policies, both your homeowner's policy and your auto policy that eliminates almost anything that could happen to your house, it's struck by lightning or there's a hurricane or anything. I mean, so I think they've really done their homework on their statistics and, made policies that, but I think they have very limited coverage if you really read them carefully. So I think that's how they've made their money, just staying away from the areas that have the highest risk or the most common casualties.
But how they know it, but I pay my insurance every 6 months for my car. Whenever it's come and due, I get about 15 of them that week. Companies never even heard of. I mean, how much money can there be in insuring a 20-year-old Suburban? I mean, is there that much spread in there? I only paid like $300 for $1 million coverage or something. How much fluff is in there, for God's sake?
I hear you.
But then you've got the Maserati though. Yours is a little higher.
not the Maserati, but it's a little higher. Here, here it depends. I mean, like anywhere in the country, it really depends where you live. You know, if the incidence of theft and accidents and all that are high, like they are on the east coast of Florida, your insurance would probably double or triple than it is on the west coast of Florida.
Well, that's true. So Dan, you're When the mid-sized companies in the infrastructure area, I'm thinking you've got, that's right where the target ought to be. Are you looking at those specifically, or they just happen to come upon you?
No, we own. Yeah, the couple names that I mentioned, we own, like Aztec. We own Federal Signal. There's another company called Ultra Motion, which does gears and anything that has to do with trucks or anything that has to do with safety. A lot of these companies are now sort of putting themselves out there as safety and infrastructure growth. They're already in those businesses, so they're kind of advertising like that. So those are three names. We had talked before about Blue Knight, which does asphalt storage. So we're in Blue Knight's small, but the others are, small to mid-size. We're in that small to mid-size space. We're continuing to grow. U.S. Concrete is another good company. They've had a really big run recently, well-managed. That's, I think, a good area of focus, or at least to have, if you think of, sector rotation or having a certain part of your portfolio in an industry that is likely to perform well, those are good, solid names, I think, going forward. Industrials, you're not going to have a whole lot of surprises if you do your homework.
Dan, where this Federal Signal, they aren't the guys who did ongoing, I say did. They're not the guys who are doing all the cab signal and all the commuter trains and everything where the thing stops on its own, automatic braking, or is that U.S. Signal?
That's probably U.S. Signal, yeah, because Federal Signal was more with their client base initially was more with police and fire.
Okay.
And they may be doing some of that, but they've moved out. Their other division is specialty vehicles that get involved in, cleaning roads, cleaning sewers, building, like the special, you need a certain type of truck, specialty truck to hoist, materials for building.
Okay.
And that's their specialty.
Because there was a huge multi-year, maybe a decade project to take pretty much every rail area and have automatic, if the engineer fell asleep or whatever, that the thing would break on its own.
I'll ask them if that's their project. I'm not sure, but they're, the larger part of their business is this specialty truck business, which is the infrastructure play.
Are they doing the fire trucks, are they? Those are the guys out of Wisconsin.
Well, there's another company out of Wisconsin, is Brady, that we have. But this company that I'm talking about is, they're in Oakbrook.
Okay. You're not doing anything with the guys who, my brother was, and he, he's got some guys that are putting together, well, they're not, it's not for public or anything, but they're trying to put together a track record on some, stocks that are in the electric car, electric truck business, the batteries and people. And the guys, the Oshkosh, the guys that are like fire trucks, they're involved in electric trucks with Ford now or something, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. We were involved in Ballard Systems, which does the fuel cells for electric vehicles, and they had a lot of their business was international, especially Europe and Asia, and they had all the public transportation as their clients, and the firemen, and the fire trucks and all that. They're in the process of going through that.
I'm going to say that's
a competitive industry. The fuel cell is another one that does that. That's a competitive industry. I think it's a good industry.
Yeah,
there's a lot of upside, but it's a competitive business. Barriers to entry are not that high.
Real quick, one more question. Where do you think this Coinbase goes? Straight up?
I'm sorry?
Where do you think this Coinbase goes? Straight up?
I'm not following it that quick. I think it's going to go straight up just based on the chatter and talk and I think it's got the momentum behind it. I'm not sure. I don't want to be riding on one of those amusement rides where it goes straight up and all of a sudden it drops.
Yeah, I know.
I don't like that dropping failing myself, but I do think it has. I think it has a lot of support. And when you start seeing, a lot of people are impressed when certain names start putting a lot of money into it, whether it be a certain fund or a certain individual or a certain celebrity, and when that starts happening, I think that. No matter what, we're going to see like a...
Well, that never changes, does it? Matt Weber buys a stock, goes on TV, and tells other people to buy it. That never changes, does it?
No, it doesn't, but, you want to get stuck with it. It's not going to be on when all of a sudden it's turning, right?
You should buy it. By the way, who sold it to me? Well, me.
Yeah.
Dan, take care of yourself, bud. Talk at you next week. SP Peters up 27 and a quarter, and NASDAQ Peters up 133. Matty Weber doing the best job he can, fighting with the tuck pointers outside our window. That's the noise. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Blowing one by Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie. Mr. Brett Weber on the board. S&P futures up 25. NASDAQ futures up 133. Dow up 166. We're putting a whip to it here this morning. Got some good earnings out of the banks, and we've got A lot of money. Retail sales boom by nearly 10% in March. Here we got their check. Gee, go figure. I'm shocked. Nikkei up 21 points. It's unchanged. Well, up 0.1%. Shanghai down 17.5%. Hang Seng down 107.4%. Over in Europe, all to the upside, but not a whole lot. DAX up 30, up 2.2%. FTSE up 36.5. CAC around up 23.4. So, mildly bullish across the board. As a way of review, yesterday Dow was up 53. S&P was down 17, though, and that's 0.4%. It was a reasonable down day. NASDAQ down 138. That was a full 1%. So mixed market yesterday. Bonds, 10-year minus 0.03, so down to 1.6. So bonds have not really shut up like you would guess with the inflation numbers the other day, but the Fed keeps buying them. That's one of the reasons. If you try and sell them, guess what? They just keep buying from it. Bund, minus 0.01, so minus 0.28%. Japan, positive 0.09. UK, positive 0.77. So not a whole lot of change there either. Oil, down 41 cents, but still 62.74, was up a bunch yesterday. Brent down 28 cents, 66.30. Natural gas down 2 cents, 2.59. RBOB down a penny to 202. Now we've got gold up now 14.50 to 17.50. Silver up 17 cents, 25.69. Copper up another 3 cents, 4.16. And we've got the crypto Bitcoin up 829, 62,664. Where did it top, man? 65 or something? I'm thinking it was up.
It was right around there. Yeah.
I think so. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports? Then we're going to talk about your hero, Bernie Madoff, a little bit.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Well, we're continuing to be off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Kennedy is probably our slowest moving expressway right now, with a lot of red in both directions as heavy traffic volumes are picking up, but no accidents to report. Eden still looks okay. Eisenhower traffic building, same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good for the most part as well. No accidents or stalls down there. We did have a crash on I-80 eastbound just before Maple Street, which is exit 137. That crash has been cleared, but all kinds of congestion down on I-80. This is just east of Joliet on I-80. North of there, near Bolingbrook on I-55 on the southbound side before Weber Road, my favorite road, there's a crash that's blocking the right lane on the outbound I-55. That's way southwest past Bolingbrook on I-55. Off the expressways, there's a crash down south, 123rd at Halstead. And then out west, there is a crash, Route 83, at Red Oak Avenue. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, clouds early. Could see some sunshine later on, but cold temperatures, well below normal, as we'll reach a partly cloudy high of 50 today. Right now, it's overcast and 41. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 83. Right now, it's clear and 67. In sports, the White Sox had an 8-0 thrilling win highlighted by a Carlos Rodon no-hitter. He took a perfect game into the ninth inning before hitting a batter. Finished with 114 pitches, 9 innings, no hits, no walks, just the one-hit batter, as I mentioned. He also struck out 7 guys as the White Sox shut out the Cleveland Indians 8-0. Congratulations to Carlos Rodon. Cubs continue to struggle both offensively and defensively and pitching as they were blown out by the Brewers 7-0, dropping 2 of 3 up in Milwaukee. They're off today, much needed. Diamondbacks were off last night. They're back in action tonight at Washington. NBA hoops, Bulls lost to the Magic 115-106. Suns were off. In hockey, Blackhawks were off last night. They're back in action tonight in Detroit with a 6:30 p.m. Chicago time puck drop versus the Red Wings. Coyotes were blown out by the Wild 5-2.
Chief. Red Wings are horrible, right?
Yeah, they're not good.
I have a. I was gonna ask you. Do you see what the Rodon? You didn't watch it, but they were talking about he was. What are you, South Carolina State, something like that? And he was the number 3 guy picked in the draft, right? In 2016, somewhere in there. And so somebody said to him, what do you think about being picked number 3? And guess what his answer was?
I'm the first 2 teams that passed on me are going to regret it.
He said, I call it motivation.
There you go. I like that. Yeah, he was drafted in 2016 out of North Carolina State. NC State.
Right, it was somewhere. One of those Carolina joints.
NC State's a big school, though.
Yeah. When I was in college a long time ago, North Carolina always was somewhat of a basketball power, but so was South Carolina, and NC State clearly was too. And South Carolina hasn't been anything for ages.
Well, if you've ever been in that Winston-Salem, Raleigh-Durham area of North Carolina, you basically have North Carolina, which is Chapel Hill, you have Duke, which is Durham, you have Wake Forest, which is Winston-Salem, and you have North Carolina State, which is Raleigh-Durham. Which is Raleigh, which is kind of right next to Durham.
And right near the Durham Bulls.
Yeah, all 4 of those schools are within like 15 minutes of each other. And they're 4 just huge ACC schools that have big time, you know, basketball and sports programs.
It's very similar to the people in Philadelphia. With all the schools.
Except these are Power 5 schools.
Right.
The Philadelphia ones are not.
They were.
None of them are except Villanova, and they don't even have a football team.
Right. Well, but
these are big-time ACC schools that have huge basketball, football, baseball, you know, 30,000 plus enrollment, except for Duke's a little smaller. But it's crazy to me to have 4 gigantic schools like that all within, you know, 30 minutes.
Well, when I was in college in the early 70s, you never heard about North Carolina State's football team or South Carolina. They were all basketball schools.
North Carolina State, I would say, of the last – 15 years, has had a solid football program.
Yeah. Well, much, you know, much better.
Yeah, they're in the top 25, you know, call it two out of every 4 years, something like that. Basketball, they were really good in the 80s. They haven't really been as good since, but they have a rabid fan base, whereas Duke and North Carolina are great at basketball and then occasionally good at football. Wake Forest is probably better at football than basketball, but they've had some good basketball teams, too. They had Tim Duncan there back in the 90s.
Got a good golf team, Ernie Palmer.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I remember when Lou Holtz went from Notre Dame and we didn't go directly, he went to coach South Carolina. I'm like, those guys even have a football team? You know, I never heard of them being, you know, decent. But they, you know, the ACC. Well, they're not in the ACC, are they? They're
who?
South Carolina.
No, they're in the SEC.
Yeah, they. I think they used to be. What was the league they were all in before? Was it the same?
I think South Carolina has always been in the Southeast Conference.
Okay.
I think. I don't know that for sure. But yeah, they've always been with like Kentucky and Alabama and those schools.
How unusual is it for a guy like Rodon to come back? He had the Tommy John, but he had shoulder issues. Were those pitching shoulder issues? I mean, how the hell do you do that and come back and throw 99?
Yeah, I'd have to research his history, but just off the top of my head, I know he's had several arm problems, including shoulder problems. He had tons of talent, had struggled finding the strike zone, bounced back and forth a little bit between AAA and the big leagues, even though he was a highly touted prospect, to the point where they almost gave up on him before this season. I think there was a lot of conversation about whether or not they were even going to bring him back.
There had to be a lot of people last year that got lost in the shot. How did you even? He didn't even have a minor league season. I don't even know how you're doing.
Right, and you know, so to see him come back, he's always had the stuff. It was more between the ears and staying healthy. So to see him come back and have a night like he did last night, it's pretty cool. And you know, I'm pulling for the guy.
Quick question. I don't know if you know the answer. Obviously, the Cubs last year, you had an expanded team because you were worried about half the team getting COVID. So you had, I'm going to say, 25 guys hanging around practicing in South Bend. But they didn't play any other teams, right? Unless it was on
that's
the
right.
Sly.
Yep.
What happened to all the other 300 guys in the minor league system? They just were home?
Yes.
What did they do? Just trying to find a high school to pitch batting practice to or what?
They were on their own, I think. I'm sure the highly touted prospects were all in South Bend, like you said, for the Cubs or wherever that place was for your particular team. But everyone else, if you didn't make that list of guys that they wanted to monitor and work out and make sure that they were progressing, I assume you were tasked to work out on your own.
Well, how did it get to be just because it was close? I mean, the South Bend's their A team, right?
Yeah, it's just because it was close.
Des Moines are
AAA.
By the way, talk about a real quick segue. The things you do for your female, Maddie. Well, the thing I always end up doing over at Audrey's is watching, since she obviously is really good at her real estate and she loves everything about houses. Every Sunday morning, I'm regaled by either, you know, we're buying something on the South Carolina shore or a lake in Indiana, or we're fixing up this place, or we're flipping or flopping this place. I'm like, oh god. I mean, I'm pretty interested in it too, so it's, I'm not just bragging totally here, but these guys are getting louder. So guess who's on there? Some guy, and he's got Asian, very attractive, nice bride, or I think they're getting married, and he's moving to be the voice of the Iowa Cubs.
Oh, really?
That's his job. And she's been there arguing about she wanted to live in Des Moines where she can walk to the, you know, the coffee shop and the bar and so forth, and didn't have any kids yet. And he wanted the house in the suburbs like when he grew up. And I'm thinking, if he's really good at what he does, he's only going to be there a year or two. What do you need to have this huge house? You got to off then.
Yeah.
But,
really.
They ended up getting the big house in the burbs. And he seemed like a nice enough guy, and she was real nice. It was a nice couple. And,
where were they living before?
You know, they were coming from some place where an A team or I don't know if it was the Cubs. But he just got hired to be the new voice. It didn't say radio or TV. Those guys aren't on TV, are they, or are they?
AAA? I doubt AAA's on TV. Maybe they have a local station that carries some games or something, but I think it's more radio.
But he was going to be the radio voice of the Cubs. And I thought, hey, congratulations to him. And he picked a pretty nice lady. Looked like things were going good.
Well, that's
for
how
him.
You start. I mean, the broadcasters come up typically just like the players do. You start in small markets and work your way up. And then maybe you're doing pre and post or something like that, and then you're hoping for a shot at radio or TV with the big league club. And then once you get to the big leagues, then you move, you try to, you know, like Pat Hughes was the voice of the Brewers, and then, you know, you get an opportunity to come to Chicago, make a lot more money, and you take that, and then that's where you stay.
Well, it's because WGN's a 50,000-watt station, the Brewers aren't.
Well, he's not on WGN.
Oh, he was.
Well, but the score is, too.
Score is even better than GN.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got to talk about your buddy, Bernie Madoff, and a biography of the guy's life, Manny, is just a total indictment of any kind of regulatory system you might have. It just really is awful. When I go back long before this game, whenever you hear people in front of in Washington and the seemingly ignorant senators and representatives quizzing people on payment fraud or flow and everything, Bernie Madoff, there might have been somebody before him, but invented payment fraud or flow. He was an absolute pain in the ass to the CBOE and the option business when he wasn't even in the options business, because he designed this payment for order flow, and everybody, all the member firms are like, hey, this is great. Let's cheat our clients and get paid for it. I just say real briefly what Bernie did. If people have questions, just tweet them in, but I don't have that much time. Bernie bought, you've heard this before, Matt, he bought a bunch of seats on the Cincinnati Stock Exchange. Cincinnati Stock Exchange was an exchange, guess where, in Cincinnati, where they actually had people on the floor, I'm going to say, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, God knows how far back it went. Well, by the time I got on the board in the 80s, there was no people left. But you could have a seat on the Cincinnati, you could be a specialist on the Cincinnati. It was an electronic exchange, and actually you could walk downstairs in the CBOE building and point to a big old rectangular computer and you'd say, there's the Cincinnati Stock Exchange, right? So it was your kind of exchange, right? So Bernie went and bought a bunch of seats. So he was, quote, you know, specialist in a lot of these stocks with nobody there. So the CBOE bought the Cincinnati Stock Exchange. Okay, but there's a little known favorite college rule that says if another exchange buys another, say there's 200 seats, you buy 190 seats, there's 10 left. You only get to vote one seat. So if somebody owns the other 10, he's actually got more power than you in terms of policy, which is really screwed up. But so Bernie actually had kind of enough seats to where he sort of controlled the Cincinnati Stock Exchange. This is long before any of this other crap, the Ponzi scheme or anything. So in those days, the minimum tick in New York was an eighth. And I think over a certain price, it might even have been a quarter. But so let's say it was an eighth. So IBM was always quoted, you know, 70 to an eighth, 70 and an eighth to a quarter, that type of thing. And the minimum tick was a little too high. You know, it wasn't all that too high. It probably should have been a dime or something. But it was a little too high. So what Bernie did, now a lot of stocks weren't an eighth wide. A lot of stocks were 70 to a quarter, 70 and an eighth to three-eighths, that type of thing. So the idea was there were 30-some percent, since you had brokers on the New York Stock Exchange floor and everything was done essentially pretty much open outcry unless you took something out of the book, 35 to 37% of the time, you did better than the listed bid or offer. In other words, if your stock was 60 to a quarter, say, and you wanted to buy 500 shares, just when your broker made it to that pit, another broker made it to that pit, and instead of paying 60 and a quarter and the other guy selling at 60, the trade would cross at 60 and an eighth, and a specialist wouldn't do anything. It would just cross in the middle. So your order got, quote, bettered in about a third of the time. So a third of the time, you did at least 12 and a half cents better, which means you did pushing four plus cents better on a tick half the time. Right, so now you're still paying, you know, reasonable prices in those days to go to the New York Stock Exchange. You got to pay that guy, but you got something for it. You know, you got on average four cents back. Well, plus, but if your bid and offer happened to be a half, you did it in the middle. Well, then you got, you know, 25 cents better. So so what Bernie said, hey, look, I'll guarantee you the New York bid and offer. Just come to me at the Cincinnati. I won't charge you. And oh, by the way, I'll kick you back a penny. So a specialist from another place, you couldn't in those days. You still can't now, even if you have you think you do, but you can't. You don't really have a takeout function. It has to go through somebody. So, but a specialist, because we were specialists on Cincinnati, you actually had a button where you could take out the offer. In other words, if I want to buy 500 shares, there were 500 shares offered at a quarter in New York, and it was the offer, I could hit the button and I could take that offer. was called a specialist takeout function. It was a specialist to specialist, specialist on the Cincinnati versus the Pecos versus the Midwest versus the New York versus the Philly. There were probably five exchanges. Now there's God knows how many. But you could actually take that order out. So what Bernie would do is he would get paid a penny, and a lot of times, you know, guys buy 500 a quarter, sell 500 even. Buy 500 a quarter, sell 500 even. He's just sitting there making the 25 cents, kicking people, but he was always able to, quote, lean on the offer or bid in New York. So the minute somebody bought 500 shares from him at a quarter, and he said, this doesn't look right, he could immediately turn around and buy it in New York at a quarter and essentially scratch himself. So he had to pay probably a minimal commission, like the next to nothing, and then he'd have to pay the penny. So he'd eat the penny on that trade. But I'm going to say that he probably made, on average, 5-6 cents a share and paid out one. Now, everybody said, hey, this is outrageous, because Matty Weber is sending an order into somebody, say Schwab or somebody, and he's paying to go to the New York floor and paying his broker. In fact, he's not paying. They're getting a kickback by going someplace else to New York, giving you the idea, although not maybe specifically telling you, that your trade took place on the New York. So then they said, okay, well, we can't stop it. The horse is out of the barn, you know, blah, blah. So what we're going to do, we're going to come down on the side of disclosure. Now, disclosure is can come in many forms, Matty. You know, if you come in the next morning and you're all of a sudden on a sofa in the family room and you tell the lovely Jill, I was here all night, what's the problem? It's my story and I'm sticking to it. It's not exactly full disclosure, would you say?
No.
Not exactly. But you were there some of the night, and, you know, there was some truth to it. It was still dark when you landed. It might have only been dark for a minute, but it was dark when you landed. So it was night. I was here last night. So the disclosure would come out as you'd get your confirm, and it would say on the back of it, if you chose to read it, well, when the moon is in the seventh hour or the seventh house and it is the age of Aquarius, once in a while we might do a trade other than on the New York Stock Exchange, and, oh, we might get some compensation for the trade. That was the disclosure. The disclosure never was Arthur Levitt, if you're in hell someplace. He was the head of the SEC. It never was, Mr. Matt Weber, please be advised that your brokerage firm charged you to go to the New York Stock Exchange. By the way, your trade not only didn't go to the New York Stock Exchange, it went to the Cincinnati Stock Exchange, and instead of them paying brokerage, for which you paid them, it went to some sleazebag named Bernie Madoff, and he kicked them money back. That was never the disclosure. So it was actually worse than you giving Jill the little fib about you were there all night, right? So, I mean, the disclosure was never disclosure. So then Bernie ended up making a buku bucks on that until all the firms said, this is a great idea. Why are we giving this money to some idiot like Bernie? And they essentially started internalizing it themselves. Or, get a load of this, and I probably shouldn't mention the names because I don't know all four of them, but they said you can't internalize order flow. In other words, if you send in if PTI had some huge trading operation, which we don't, you could never send us an order to buy 1,000 shares of IBM and us just say, I will sell it to you. Just internalize it. You can't do that. Okay, but of course these people are too smart for the dopes at the SEC. They would say there's four PTIs out there, PTI, TPI, IPT. Let's us put up 50 grand a piece and get 20% share of a new firm, and we'll send the stuff to the new firm. We'll internalize it there and we'll split the profits. Now, of course, even you, Matty, that doesn't dwell on that kind of stuff, is going to say, hey, wait a minute. Yet that's what they did. You know, so I'm saying the regulators are nowhere near any of this stuff. It's sort of like, you can't do that. Thomas, you can't do that. Wait a minute, Matty and Thomas just formed a corporation and they're doing that. It's the same thing. I mean, these people are so laughable. You know, you wonder if they're getting paid, if they're getting hired afterward, you know, what the deal is. But so that was like long before Bernie did any of this other crap, but that's how he got his name out there. That's how he got clients. That's how he got to meet a lot of people, because he was making money in that part of the business, and he already had investors. So to go from there to the next thing, he already had his, what do you call it, Matty, his entryway into the Bernie Madoff world.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know if he could have done the second part without doing the first. So get a load of this. At some point, and I'm not exactly sure, Arthur Levitt said, well, when the NASD at the time, before FINRA, decided to do more stuff more electronically, they appointed Bernie Madoff as like the head of, not the NASD, I don't think he was head of the NASD, but he was head of like their electronic trading development or something. Talk about putting the fox in charge of the hen house. So, I mean, Arthur Levitt made the man. The regulatory people made Bernie Madoff. That's why people were willing to give him money, because he held a title at the NASD, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't, you know, obviously people know I'm bristling just talking about it. S&P futures up 23, NASDAQ futures up 134. Back tomorrow, Stux and Jax.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.